Welcome to Spotlight Conversations with voice talent and DJ Donna Reed. Donna talks music and media from her sunny linoleum-free studio. Come on in.
Oh, a special guest, especially if you're from the Raleigh-Durham-Chapel Hill area, and you used to hang out at a place called The Brewery, which is where a lot of local bands would do their shows. And if you remember back in 2011, there was a man with a bagpipe who was playing the bagpipes in front of the brewery because they were closing. And so today we have Yance Covington, who played the bagpipes, and he's here today on the show. How did you get the gig at the brewery? I mean, was that your idea? Did they call you and say, hey, we're closing?
Well, I'll dispense with a fake Scottish accent so you can actually understand what I'm saying.
You sound great.
It's a little more interesting.
That's fine.
But yes, I had been a bagpiper at the time for, 11, 12 years, and been part of the North Carolina State University Pipes and Drums for 10 years. They have a great program there, and I'd been known for doing bagpipes at Renaissance fairs and with the NC State Pipe Band, of course. And as I'd like to say, graduations, births, funerals, weddings, and beheadings, I would play anything. And since the brewery had been such a fine soldier for all these years, mm-hmm. and the soldier was going down, I thought it would be fitting to play a lament, to mark its passing, So I didn't ask permission from anyone. And I just showed up. I saw there were some people taking pictures, and I posted for some pictures myself. I think you may have seen one of them on Facebook.
I did.
And I did a couple of tunes. Of course, I did "Amazing Grace," which is the favorite songs to lay somebody to rest, or in this case, an institution.
Right.
And I thought it was fitting, since. Celebrating the brewery's long years of service, I thought it would be an appropriate end to a very nice career.
It's there a long time, a lot of bands. Did you see a lot of groups there? I mean, tell me a little bit about your history of going to the brewery in Raleigh.
Well, let's see. Well, I was in the eighth grade. I was about 12, 13 years old back in 19...
You were that young getting into the brewery, huh? Okay.
I was... my best friend was sitting next to me, and every day, he would get more and more punk, more safety pins. And I was like, well, what's going on? And it's like, they have these hardcore punk shows, every Sunday. Actually, saw one of them, and it was crazy. I met him there, and, mom had to drop us off a couple of blocks away, so we didn't look like a couple of nerds. But, I believe it was a Corrosion of Conformity playing there, and mm-hmm. Ugly Americans. Let's see, they had other bands go through there, the Circle Jerks and Black Flag. I wasn't able to go as often as I wanted to, but my friend at the time, he was a real staple there, and in the News and Observer, they did a story about it, and showed a picture of this young kid being, he was just airborne, he'd been thrown off the stage, and this was in the early days, early 80s. They didn't call it moshing at the time. They didn't call it pitting. They called it slam dancing back at the time. And they would slam into each other and throw each other around. And it was so, chaotic that, they didn't quite know how to deal with it. But it looked like a lot of fun. Nobody was getting hurt. And I had continued to go to those shows whenever I could, until I was in college, actually. I believe the last Sunday matinee I saw they had a Hell Crusher from Germany and a band called Dirt from Finland or something, and a couple other bands, and unfortunately that was the last one I had gone to. But the brewery that was legendary. Black Flag played there with Henry Rollins and all those other classic punk bands that you hear about, and I did play there one time. I got on stage with a band called Monster Island that I was with at the time, and we opened for a really groovy hippie band called Toxic Popsicle. They were had a neat rhythm section with a bunch of drums and everything, and we all had a great time. Let's see, when the last few times I went there, there's a place next door called The Comets.
Yes.
And And, you know, we would go back and forth every time I was in town, meet with my Raleigh friends, and that was the place to go. You know, it was a great place. It gave a lot of bands, you know, their head starts. Henry Rollins is, of course, one of the success stories that went through there, and countless others that I can't even think to mention. So many.
And international groups, too. It just brought in so many. So how old were you when you started taking bagpipe lessons? Were you just, and what got your interest in playing the bagpipe?
Oh, I was a wee little tyke of 30 years old.
Oh, really? Okay.
Which was back in 2000. Anyway, let's see. My family is Scottish, and I had grown up going to Scottish Highland Games. Particularly in Grandfather Mountain every year.
Yes.
You know, with my family, and I saw this. There's this band from Australia called Brother. It was the first time I had seen bagpipes together with a rock band. Now, I'm a drummer. You know, I still play drums, been playing drums for 40 years. I was like, man, I've got to do that. I've got to find a bagpiper who wants to do this. This is too good to not do. And I heard the announcer say, now coming off the field is the North Carolina State University Pipes and Drums. I'm like, the who of the what? And I didn't know that NC State had their own pipe band. I contacted them. I was like, you know, I'm going to start a rock band with a bagpiper. Can you point me in the direction of somebody who might want to do it? And they said no, essentially. They said, well, we're competition-level bagpipers. Rock and roll is not really our thing. Why don't you be the bagpiper, and you can find a drummer, and we'll give you free lessons. You know, we'll give you your uniform, and everything is absolutely free. The only thing we ask is that you play with the band when you are asked to.
Cool.
And I said, well, that is cool. That is too cool to pass up. I mean, I had no idea, but that's the way bagpipe bands have been doing it for hundreds of years. I mean, no money changes place. You know, everything's free. Survive off of donations. You know, they get paid for their performances. You don't see a dime of it. But it goes to the uniforms. It goes to the loaner bagpipes, you know, if you need them. So I just hunkered down, and they have a very accelerated music program there. It's through the Department of Music, and Dr. John Leslie Sprague, you know, the director at the time.
Does he still do that? Is it something he still does?
He retired recently, and
okay.
His swan song was I got him, I don't know if you remember, Biographical Conversations with William Friday. I got him a gig on that show, you know, on a PBS.
Oh, okay. Right. I know what you're talking about. But do they do the bagpipe lessons at NC State still?
Yeah, they do. I believe there's, at the time, it was opened up to the entire community. Anyone could do it. But I think now you have to be a student, and it's only free if you're a student.
Gotcha.
You know, I believe that's the way it works, but I haven't played with them in a very long time, so I'm not sure exactly how that works. But you start off on this little bitty instrument. It's called a practice chanter, which doesn't sound like a bagpipe. It sounds more like a duck call, but it mimics the fingering of a bagpipe and the precision of the finger movements. That's one thing that really struck me, was the precision and how sharp their ears are, particularly when you're in a competition. Everybody's got to play exactly the same thing. The precision is insane.
Was it easy for you?
Easier for me, because I had no musical training other than being a drummer. A lot of people in there had been playing flutes and saxophones and trumpets and all that, and they had to relearn their fingering, because did you know that bagpipes, you play with your fingers straight and not with your fingers curled, you see?
Didn't know that.
And they had to, and there's no embouchure or mouth movements that you do. You just blow, and it's a very different sort of instrument than anything else that's out there. You know, it sounds different. It looks different. It is different.
How long did it take you till you got to the point where, okay, I've got this?
Well, the average, believe it or not, is 7 years from to be able to play in public. But I did it in like 3. I started off, they found out I was a drummer. And so they said, like, okay, well, you can still travel with us. You can play the bass drum. So I was playing bass drum in the competitions, in the parades. I was on their roster of tenor drummers, as they call them, which is sort of a mid-range drum in between the bass and the snare drums. The rhythm sections are very complex, you know, what you have to do. But I did that for a couple of years, and I just kept practicing on the pipes and started me off doing parades. You know, we would do the St. Patrick's Day Festival in downtown Raleigh every year. All the Highland Games in North Carolina, there's a bunch of them. There's one every weekend if you know where to look.
Mm-hmm.
And I started getting offers to do, you know, other things like weddings and graduations and things like that. So the joke I like to make is that, like, why just start playing pipes? Well, I've been playing a drum set for 20 years, and the drums just weren't loud enough anymore.
Good comment. So are you in a band all the time? I mean, do you?
Well, I did until this year. This pandemic we're in really shut everything down. One of the bands I was with is called Thunderstruck NC.
Okay,
and I've
heard of them.
Yeah, we toured quite a bit up and down the East Coast and elsewhere. I had this outrageous outfit. I would wear Gene Simmons boots and a leather kilt and, you know, spikes all over my arms and Viking horns. And I would stomp out there and I would play Long Way to the Top, which is the first rock and roll song to ever have bagpipes, with my Viking horns on fire and you're shooting sparks everywhere. It was quite the spectacle.
So you're like Angus and Gene kind of juxtapositioned together.
I guess, you know, I don't know. I was just trying to be interesting, you know, and the trivia is that AC/DC will never do that song live because, well, Bon Scott's not alive to play it anymore, so they're just not going to do it.
Right.
But our claim to fame is our singer, Lee Robinson, had an audition with the actual AC/DC because he sounded so much like Brian Johnson and Bon Scott.
You're the owner and founder of Kaboom Art Gallery, and that's also in Raleigh. And tell me a little bit about that.
That was a something space, as we called it, literally underground. It was a basement located on Main Street in Garner. And my father passed away, and he left me his office building where he had his law office, you know, on Main Street in Garner there. And he had this basement that I grew up using for whatever, usually practice rooms or, you know, storage or whatever. You know, people kept asking me, it's like, hey, is this space for rent? What do you do here? I mean, can we borrow it or whatever? And I said, like, well, you know, that's a good idea. All my friends said, like, yeah, you know, you could have all kinds of stuff here. So, I sold the building to some very nice people who let me use the basement, rent-free for as long as I wanted. Just kind of put the word out there. We called it Kaboom Art Gallery because we thought we were going to be an art gallery. There's some art went on there. Had a lot of bands. Nobody really famous, but very, very young bands who were under 21, who just really enthusiastic, very talented. A lot of them were on tour, but they couldn't play anywhere in the Triangle because they wouldn't let them in the door because they're under 21.
Mm-hmm.
But, they could... You know, we were an all-ages venue, no problem with any rules, you know, like that. We would have shows and shows and shows, and we had several people doing arts and craft fairs and, movie screenings. And we would have an art show every now and then.
That's great. So, they were very appreciative, I bet, a lot of those musicians, having a place to go.
Yeah, particularly the, you know, bands on tour. What was really cool is... pretty soon after we got started, there was a coffee shop that opened up next door, you know, called Full Bloom on Main Street. And they've been trying to revitalize Main Street Garner for years and years, and it was finally started to happen. You know, they built a rec center, and my childhood friend, Patrick Bird, had opened this coffee shop, you know, out of my dad's old law office. Just did a great job. Bands would show up at 6 o'clock, hungry, thirsty, want somewhere to hang out, cool off.
Mm-hmm.
That was the place. It was a great symbiosis between, you know, the coffee and the craft brew, you know, upstairs, and then whatever mayhem was going on downstairs. You know, we finally had to shut it down in November. You know, the you know, the owners had let me use it for 7 years. But, and plus the irony is, even if it was open now, it would be closed because of everything that's going on. So.
Well, you did some great things for a lot of artists, I'm sure. So,
oh yeah,
what do you have planned for more bagpipe gigs? Is it heavy? First of all, before you tell me that, it's like carrying a bagpipe. Is it really heavy?
Well, not really heavy. They're just, you can think of it, see a man wrestle a screaming octopus.
Okay.
It's, they're,
there's a visual.
Unwieldy, I guess you could say. They're unwieldy. It's not something that, you know, you pick up a guitar, you strap it on. It's kind of intuitive. Okay, this sits here, you know.
Right.
But bagpipes, you really gotta you gotta hold them right. You gotta develop the ability to keep all of the drones, they call them, with a steady air pressure. And the breathing has nothing to do with your fingering. That's it's kind of like patting your head and rubbing your stomach, you know, that sort of thing. It's you're multitasking, you know.
When you take it out of its case, is it like, and I haven't seen one up close, is like all these arms just come flailing? I mean, how would you describe, you know, how does that work?
Actually, they can pack up to be quite small. And, you know, most people think that bagpipes, you know, you need a pickup truck for them. But actually, they come apart and, let's see, you take them out of the case and you put the big, long bass drone together. And then what you do is you you warm them up. You know, it means you blow the pipes for a little bit, get some air circulating through them, warm them up. It's always recommended you do 5 to 10 minutes of warming up, you know, to get your fingers going and get the drones tuned. You know, they say that a bagpiper spends half his life playing and the other half tuning, which is true. Those the drones, which are the they make the low buzzing sound. There's three of them. There's a bass drone and two tenor drones, which kind of harmonize. You have to tune them to where they harmonize with each other, and then you tune them to your chanter, which is where the high-pitched noise comes out. I mean, I'm sorry, high-pitched music comes out.
Right.
You you tune them to where they're all in harmony, and that's why a pipe major's your job is so important with a band, because not only does he tune the bagpiper to himself, but he tunes every bagpiper to every other bagpiper in the room.
Is there plaid on the bagpipe, or can you interchange that? Or tell me about that.
See, the bag part is made out of leather or Kevlar, you know, in some in some cases. It was originally a sheep stomach, so that's why it's shaped like a mouth and a stomach, because that's what it was. You know, they were a bit foul-smelling, so they decided to use, you know, use leather and other materials. What you're referring to is just a bag cover, and they come in a variety of things. My particular one is black velvet. Velveteen, as they call it, and you can get them in, you know, tartans and, you know, in any number of things. It just, it's your personal preference. It's like, you know, what color your guitar strap is, you know.
Okay,
it's just,
gotcha. When you were learning, what was the hardest thing to master playing the bagpipes?
I would say the grace notes. Now, what makes bagpipe music sound like bagpipe music is not the notes that you play, but it's the lightning fast finger movement.
Like in piano.
In between the notes.
Piano has it too, I think. Okay, go ahead.
And that's, we spend a great deal of time just doing grace notes. You know, you got your C doubling, and you got your low A grip, and you've got any number of, you know, fingertip, you know, finger acrobatics that you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, so it's not like you're just going from one note to another. You're not just going a da da da. You're going a da 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 da. You know, like that.
It's
just,
I see.
Lightning fast in a fraction of a beat.
You were lucky to get to NC State to learn all this. This is so cool. It was like right in your backyard.
Oh, absolutely. And it was right there. And I had some of the, you know, best pipers in the world helping us out. But they just kind of kept it a secret. You know, I was lucky to stumble upon it. It took me so many places. Another thing that it did for me was I was a member of the North Carolina Renaissance Fair for several years. And, you know, I had me a character. I was called Seamus Nick Haggis. I was a a Scottish character. I was a guy who would, you know, lead the costume character parades around.
Okay.
And my whole, you know, I had this fake Scottish accent, and I had this, I don't know if you know what a haggis is, but it's the national dish of Scotland.
It's food. It's some kind of a dish. Yeah, it's guts, no?
Well, it's, yes. It's kind of nothing in America. It's a sheep stomach. You know, it was a survival food.
I've learned so much more about bagpipes. I mean, I see the picture of you. If, you know, folks want to go on Facebook, I'm sure it's there, of you with the bagpipes, full regalia, in front of the brewery, a landmark bar in Raleigh, North Carolina. And it's just so cool that you just took it upon yourself to do that. And now I know the backstory of, you didn't just grab bagpipes and play. You are a bagpiper. I mean,
yep.
You've been...
It is not for the faint of heart. I will say that, particularly when you're doing competitions.
and when this pandemic is over, you're going to have your own gig somewhere, I think. You just, people are going to go
sure. Well, I know one thing for sure is Thunderstruck's going to start touring again, because we were just getting to where we were selling out theaters, you know, and doing these big festivals. It just got started, you know, and we had several more things planned, and, well, that's kind of put on hiatus. Then, you know, I have another band that I play for that I'm the singer-songwriter, and we are called Yeah. And since I'm the front man and write all the songs, I can play bagpipes anytime I want. So you may have heard I Don't Want to Do My Laundry on YouTube. You may have heard It's Not Illegal, It's Just Weird.
Okay.
You may have heard any number of our goofy songs there with me and my lovely wife's band. So yeah, you'll see me playing bagpipes with them once we get going again.
Would you guys have a website?
We're on Facebook.
Okay, where's that?
We're called Yeah, YEAH in parentheses. And the gimmick is, my name is Yance. That's the Y. Our guitarist name is Ed, plays bass for Knowledge is for Fools. He's the E.
Mm-hmm.
My wife, Angela, is the A.
Mm-hmm.
And we have an H in parentheses, so we're not called Ye or Yay, but Yeah. So our gimmick is, we live in a parenthetical universe, so you can parenthesize yourself.
It's marketing, and I like it. Yes,
yeah.
You are awesome. I am so glad that we had a chance to talk with you. I am just delighted. This has been very informative.
Well, I'm honored to be part of these legendary, you know, I remember Mark Arson, I remember you, and I remember all these folks, you know, and back when rock and roll radio existed, you know, you guys were the bomb, you know, so
thank you.
And now you're doing the internet thing. So
Thank you. And thank you for your kind comments about WRDU back in the day, too. That was very nice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm a big, big fan. And, you know, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you all about this and tell all my friends about it. You know, make them think
I'm
a rock star or something.
Yance, thank you very much for coming in tonight.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening to me ramble.
You've been listening to Spotlight Conversations with Donna Reed. Thanks for tuning in.